podcast?
Movie podcast.
Are you getting
earlier, I mean, before Tig says welcome everybody.
Welcome everybody to the movie podcast. Episode, oh, god damn it, I forgot which episode. I forgot to look it up. Probably 170? I don't know. I'll look it up while we're doing this. I am your host, Tiggs, and with me, as always, are Russ.
The new Marvel.
And Peter.
If we're starting the podcast, it would be great if anyone could just invite me in.
That's not going to happen.
Oh, I see what you did there.
Oh man. Oh boy. All right. Okay. I get it. We're going to get there. We're going to talk about that one. That's probably the one that we should end with, because I think that that's the one that we all liked. Actually, no, it might not be. It's been a while. The world has changed. Skype is gone. We've switched over to this Riverside FM on Russ's suggestion. And it's pretty good so far. I'm not going to lie. It sounds way better than the Skype calls. I'm not going to lie. Just from that test recording we did.
Yeah, it could be that it just, you know, the isolating everybody's vocals is probably a good thing.
Well, you know what? We will find out at the end of this, after we all listen to it, and see what we all think on that one. Yeah. Oh man, it's episode 169. Damn.
Nice.
Yeah, there you go. Really missed an opportunity there for something. I don't know. Anyway, there's been movies. There's been a bunch of movies. We've seen a bunch of movies. Some good, some not so good. But, you know, we'll get into it. And that's really how it goes. All right. So let's kick it off. I want to start with something that we've all seen. We've actually all seen most of these. But Warfare has probably, like, almost exited my head since I've seen it, so I think we should start with that one.
Well, it was such a rich text.
So dense. So there's like so much there.
Yeah. So many characters with so many like intertwining stories.
Oh my gosh. Who directed this one?
This is Alex Garland and like a guy who was like there, a real
who
guy.
Wrote. Okay. Oh, okay. Okay. So yeah. Wait, Garland actually direct. It wasn't just him producing it. It was a co-direction.
So, the dude from Reservoir Dogs, from Reservation Dogs, who plays him, I guess.
Yeah.
The real guy. And yeah, it's like a who's who of all the boys that would probably be in those like teen girl magazines if those were still a thing.
Are those not the thing anymore?
I don't
know. We've lost Skype. We've lost bookstores.
I'm just assuming that social media killed that magazine.
And yeah,
if it
probably
hasn't, Teen Beat. They're all in it. Yeah. All that shit. something Jonathan Taylor Thomas would be in.
Oh, JTT. Yeah.
Yes.
Tiger Beat.
Home for the Holidays.
Yeah.
Oh, Tiger Beat. Shit.
Well, this is our Tiger Beat who's who. Let me just tell you. You got Will Poulter, who got cute. You got Kit Connor, who's a cutie. Joseph Quinn, cutie. Michael Gandolfini's there. You've got Charles Melton, cutie. Noah Centineo, cutie. DeFaro, Woo something or other from Runa Tai from whatchamacallit, Reservation Dogs. Cutie. Everybody's a cutie.
A lot of cuties.
And they all die.
Yeah, spoiler. Yeah.
So the opening of the movie is maybe my favorite part, where they're all just watching a music video on like an early YouTube. It's just that Call On Me song. And
I thought I was... I thought I was watching the wrong movie at first. And I was like, what's going on? Cause like, not only that, but the colors were like so bright and everything looked so weird. I was just like, something weird is going on right now. So,
this movie did the thing of giving you a palate cleanser before you even get any food.
Before your palate needs cleansing.
Right. And then it ends and there is no, there will be no more palate cleansing.
Nope.
You get, they clear the decks right off at the beginning. They're like, ah, all right, we want to get you in a good headspace. And then we just want to give you 90 minutes of pure fucking hell.
Yeah.
And if the point of this movie is that this shit is senseless and stupid,
which
mission accomplished.
Yeah,
totally. Because this is, it's, and like I think I kind of mentioned it in my review, there's nothing fundamentally wrong with this movie.
No.
But this is not, I don't think we need these anymore. I don't know how many more kids I can see just kind of either lose their life or lose their life, lowercase L,
right,
to bullshit that we have no business being part of.
Being in.
And I'm hoping that's the point of this movie. I really didn't watch a lot of interviews or anything.
Yeah.
Because if you're like, that movie was awesome, I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with
you? Yeah, what do you think? Yeah, that can't be the that's be not the takeaway.
That can't be the takeaway though.
Oh God, don't even get there. Like when they're actually like exiting, where they're like the sniper kind of like a hotel room or whatever it is that they're in at that point. It's not a hotel room. And then you know the tank gets like just bombed, and it's just like, oh God, I am so depressed and horrified right now.
Yeah. It's
very well made.
Yeah, it's an interesting filmmaking experiment.
Yes.
Yeah. Is what I would kind of refer to it as. Because in my mind, as you said, like, I'm not expecting it to, you know, persuade me that this particular war, if not all, are pretty dumb.
War is good. No. Yeah. They missed you, huh?
So, as you said, like, we get like this quickest little hint of character at the beginning, and then they like try to have them like kid with each other a little bit, but all of that goes away.
Yeah.
And
which again, the point, right?
Yeah, it's fine. It's just fine. It's just like, it's, as you said, like, why, we don't need this anymore. So why is this a full feature?
Yeah.
What is this the case test for? Like, what are you, like, Alex Garland, what are you trying to do next off of this experiment? Like, shouldn't this be something that he's using to test out?
Right.
Something? Yeah.
Like, these movies came in the opposite order. Like, if this if this came before Civil War,
yeah,
totally,
I 100% get it. But Civil War is like creative. It's interesting. It's visceral. The sound is wild. You did all of these things, but there's like a narrative thrust. And then you do this, which is like this. I mean, I don't even know if what the order these films came in, but I'm like, there's no way this, I believe this was filmed after, but it shouldn't have been. Like, this should have been the first movie. I don't know.
It does, like, I do wonder, just because, like, Civil War, when was that? That was early last year?
It was, like, a full year ago. It was, like, April
it was like a year
of
ago.
2024, and then this was April of 25.
Yeah. It's, you're right. It feels like a really interesting, like, technical experiment in which to, like, do, like, another narrative on top of it. I did enjoy, you know, as much as you can kind of enjoy the entire experience of it. It was just like gut wrenching throughout the entire time. But at the end of it, I was just like, okay, I guess I'll watch Look Who's Talking now, because like, this is, I need something to bring me up after this one.
Yeah.
It's just also especially strange because they do the thing like a real life movie does at the end, in which they show you the actor next to the real life person they were portraying.
Yeah.
And so many of the people's faces were blurred out. And it was like, is there some weird army regulation? Are those people still enlisted and cannot have their face shown, or did all these people not want
their
face shown? That's a good question. I didn't even think about that.
The second one, that's pretty fucking weird.
My first thought was it's the second, and that definitely colored my opinion of what I had seen, because I was like, I feel like if the that many people, because it was more it was more blanked out than not blanked out.
Yes.
And once I clocked that, I was like, I feel like these people didn't want this movie for whatever reason, whether they're still traumatized or just like did not feel like this is an accurate representation. I don't know why, but that made me a little dubious on the film. And it was the sort of thing I didn't want to research because I'm like, it is good. As good as a movie like this can be. And I don't want to dislike it because I like Alex Garland. But that definitely made me feel away.
Yeah.
We just don't need these.
No.
We get it. Not I right got now. It. We're good. Like, it's bad. It needs to stop. And I don't think the movies about war is hell have ever helped us stop doing it.
They haven't changed an opinion on it.
Yeah.
Right. And that's probably like, and again, like it's one thing. It's just like, well, just holding up the mirror. I totally get it again, but it's not, I don't think anyone walked out of it with a different view on anything. No. Really. Except for how hot some of these guys are, I guess. I don't know.
Oh, you know, cuties. All right. Cuties across the board. Yeah, Michael.
Let's get to a feel good. And this is usually when I swerve and do something that's not a feel good, but we're going to go to Ephes.
Oh,
So Ephes, probably one of the movies of the last couple of years that is needs a rust down slightly. It's a very small independent film about a men's baseball league.
Yep.
They're about to lose their field. So this is the last game ever.
Wait, so are you doing the rust down? Is that what's going on right now?
I just went in terms of, I was just going over what it's about.
Because literally no one has heard of it.
Yes.
No. I only knew about it because both of you reviewed it on Letterboxd and gave it very high reviews. I was like, should go check this out. And then I looked it up on like Metacritic and it was getting rave reviews there too. Like, right, guess I'll check it out.
I saw the trailer for it at Jacob Burns. And I was like, oh, this is one of Peter's favorite movies of the year already.
Yep.
And I just assumed, I was like, all right, so that's for him. Cool. And then I was like, well, what if it's for me? And I, 2 minutes in, I was like, ah, I'm sold.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is so just, it's like one of the purest, most, I don't know, just fucking good. It's just fucking good, dude.
Yeah.
Like, and it's not doing anything all that crazy. It's just like, I don't know, men of a certain age playing a game and all that comes with it. I think this movie, I don't know that this does well unless you literally are like 35 and older. You have to feel some sense of mortality to even appreciate this.
Totally.
Yeah, and very much, even if it's not something you're feeling, but it's very much kind of about how men cannot tell anyone how much something means to them.
Yep.
Yeah.
Cannot say it out. Like, stubbornness would not allow them to say it out loud. And it because so the movie never leaves the ball field.
Nope.
For a full 9-inning game, it's on the ball field or the area, like, on the other side of the fence of other people watching this game as well. So it's such a bottle one location film. And I think it does a really good job of kind of giving you a big question mark about what year it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. No idea. Yeah.
It skews slightly 70s, but I think you can make an argument that it's not.
Yeah. I think when you see some of the teens, it's like, it could be, especially considering it's a small town. Small towns generally feel like they're about 10 or 15 years behind where everyone else is. So I was like, this is like probably like 1993, 94.
Something I definitely felt 90s, even just from like the skater kids that were like the two skater kids or whatever that were there. I feel like if I knew more about cars, maybe that would have been a giveaway at some point, but not that it matters.
That's before the 2000s, like you couldn't tell. Like, there were so many cars that were 20 years old in, like, the 90s. Like, people just had cars for forever because back in that day, they built things to last. So, like, I took all that into consideration. I was like, this is the early to mid-90s.
That's where I landed, because it takes place in Massachusetts, and at one point they mentioned that this game is a makeup for a game canceled because of Hurricane Bob. And that's a hurricane that hit New England in, like, 92.
Okay.
Ah, okay.
All right, so we're looking at probably a 93 situation, which feels right. The Sports Authority, I don't know how long that store existed, but that's where their water bottles were from, and that's definitely a 90s store.
Yeah. I don't remember when that closed, but are there still Sports Authorities? I don't even know.
Modell's is probably going to be going soon too. But it was just so delightful, and like watching, I just called them blue team, red team.
Yeah.
But the catcher on the red team was like, I was like, this is me.
Yeah.
This is adult me. I will do something until I am physically incapable of moving, because it matters and I love it and I care about it. And I can't say that, and I won't, but you'll know just by the ritualistic nature and my attachment to doing things I've always done, it means something.
You're talking about this podcast, right, Russ?
Exactly. It could be anything. It could be stupid drinking competitions I do, or just whatever. Like, I'm not going to say, oh, it matters because it means we're alive and we're all friends. But that is a lot of it. And like, these are just dudes who've got to kind of all hang out doing a thing they like together, and all the shit that comes with that. They've been doing this shit for their whole lives, and now it's done.
Talking about this podcast, Russ.
Because as we've said before, like, this is a podcast I never want to stop, even though it's a podcast that I don't tell anyone about.
Yeah.
I like this being the reason, like, we have a set reason why we have to talk about movies.
Yeah. Right. And that's what, like, this is a set reason to go and play baseball.
Yep.
Right. Like, it is a game that they love. It's a game, whether they actually love the game or if they just love, like, going out and doing something together, that's, like, besides the point.
Yep.
It is that they have been together for however long, and that they just don't want to stop. Even when, like, you know, there's a baptism going on, one guy's just like, I can't, what am I going to do? I'm in the middle of a game right now.
It's like, well, you got to go, fuck face. Like, yeah. And it's just funny to watch, like, how their lives, their actual lives, encroach on this thing that they want to do. Like, their kids are there.
Yes.
It gets dark. Like, you've got to come home. We're making dinner. Like, real things happen. And you know, like, that was not the case maybe 10 or 15 years ago, and now it very much is.
And like, none of them are particularly good, and yet they still invite their kids to come, and it's just like, you got to come see me. I'm gonna get a hit this time. And like, it doesn't matter how bad it is, it like, it's like, no, but this is a thing, this is a part of me regardless of anything else. And that's really like what it ends up like ultimately being about. And, it's so quaint and nice and cute.
Oh, it's great.
Yeah. And lying to, even while you know you can't, still lying to yourself that you're young enough, that you're still young to do it. Because everyone keeps saying, well, you could go play baseball like a town over.
Yeah.
It's like 20 miles away. And they're all like completely shitting on those other towns. Like, no, doing that. Yeah. And it's almost that thing of like, this was the amount of effort that they wanted to put into something.
Yep.
Yep.
And if they put any more in, it would feel wrong or untrue to them.
Right.
Right.
Like, I was even nervous to take it back to this podcast that when Skype was done, so were we.
I was literally, Russ, I was about to say the same thing.
Because I was like, oh, shit. Yeah. We are men of a certain age who like things a certain way. And if they, and if any of us say anything different, we're lying.
Yeah.
So the minute you change our platform, I was like, ah, shit, this might be over.
Yep.
But I think literally changing a podcast platform was the limit of what I think we're okay with.
We thought about it. There was definitely a moment where you're just like, where I looked at it, I was like, like, I don't know. I use like Google Hangouts. That's a normal thing. Does anybody do that?
So as long as this platform survives, I don't think we'll have to move to a third, because that may be the end of us.
Yes. Yeah. 100%.
The movie's currently available to rent on Amazon. I highly suggest doing it. It Please. Is.
Yeah.
It's great.
Such a delight. Cool it. Franny is character of the year for me so far.
There's going to be, it's actually fucking like May, but it's still a while away till we start talking about like our favorite performances of like the year, but yeah. There's definitely going to be a couple from here.
Oh, like sure. The best supporting actor, like fucking buffet.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Because they're also like that's another like this is just an ensemble movie it's an ensemble of a bunch of people that you probably have never seen before. Yeah. A couple of them have been in things, right? But like it's yeah. not really all that well known.
Yeah, and I couldn't tell you off the top of my head what anyone's been in. But there's one actual
were from Uncut Gems.
Uncut Gems.
Oh
yeah.
Yes, yeah. And there's one actual former baseball player.
Oh, that's cool. Okay.
Who plays the guy that mysteriously shows up to pitch one inning.
Oh, that was so good. I love that.
The old pitcher that showed up?
Yeah.
Oh, that was great.
That was great. Is an Ephus an act? Like, I know I've heard of a pitch that is basically like a floater, but like it just drops the last second.
Yeah.
I know that my dad has talked about this before. It's always seemed fake. Is this a real pitch to those who watch? Okay.
It's not really used at all, but Zach Greinke, one of the weirdest pitchers of the last 20 years, major league pitchers, truly, truly strange dude. He would occasionally throw an Ephus. You can look it up on YouTube, watching footage of him throwing Ephus pitches. It's very funny to watch it happen in a major league atmosphere.
That's cool. Okay. I will do that after this then. Okay. Let's keep it going. All right. So let's do one more of all three of us. And then I want to do some of these like twofers, and then we're going to get into like the back three that I think are the ones that we all really want to talk about. I really want to talk about Drop. So let's talk a little bit about Drop. Let's drop. Let's drop in on Drop.
And I'll throw it on Letterboxd since I forgot.
Who is the dude? Yeah. The guy that directed this directed
Happy Death Day. Happy Death Day to You. Yeah.
Yeah, and what was the? He did a movie that didn't work out super well.
Paranormal Activity, the Marked Ones.
No, it was. We Have a Ghost. Ugh, that movie sucked. Oh,
did we? Oh God, yeah, that's David Harbour as the ghost.
Yeah,
yeah, that was a terrible movie.
That movie sucked. Shit. Yeah.
Drop is way better than that movie. I enjoyed Drop.
This is absolutely a return to form for him from the Happy Death Days and Freaky.
Yep, totally.
I think Freaky was on your top 10, Tiggs.
Oh hell yes, Freaky. It was. I love Freaky. I've watched Freaky multiple times. I've watched Drop multiple times. So like, and I will most likely watch it again. Relatively soon. I think that it is a very simple movie. It's dumb. Like this is not like it's not as good as Freaky, or even like as campy as Freaky. It probably takes stuff a little bit too seriously, at times. But I just think that it is a fun, like nearly single set movie, where. You are guessing the whole time. Like it's whether or not it's like blatantly obvious. I do think that it's
blatantly obvious.
Yeah.
But I didn't care.
If anything, it's given away by the billing at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah. Okay.
Which there's no reason why that guy should be in the get solo card billing if he is not really important.
Right.
I initially thought it was the dude, who's like, who she thinks is the guy, but like his sister shows up or whatever. And I was like, I don't know, there's going to be some sort of like other reveal that's going on here.
It felt like the beginning of like a video game when you're like an action RPG where you're going to the place where everyone talks to you.
Yeah.
And you figure out like what they do. Like back.
It's like in Fallout, like they just like.
Fallout or even the beginning of Destiny. when you go to the base. I'm like, wow, everyone is really talking at her right now. It's so weird. It's like I'm playing it as her. And I just thought that was kind of funny. But yeah, it is just a good time. Like
it's a good time.
That's what these movies are. Obviously, we're going to talk about other horror thrillers that elevate the genre.
That are actually an elevation of the genre, 100%.
You also still need movies like this to keep the genre at the right level. And this is like a fun movie that it gets in, it gets out, it does something interesting.
Yep.
It's a solid time, and
it's it won't short. Be
the greatest thing you've ever seen, but it's like horror movies they just can't be dog shit. And this is pretty good.
It's a good bad movie. I love that when the date gives her the hockey puck, like they're in Chicago. It's the Chicago Blackhawks. They couldn't even get the rights to use the Chicago Blackhawks logo on the hockey puck. It's like Chicago hockey team is what it says or something like that, which I thought was hilarious.
Yeah.
I thought that it was interesting. I know that, I don't know, I've been on the subway where kids will just start like dropping you things. And I'm just like, this is weird. I'm just going to turn off the drop feature and then it all ends. So I don't know why she didn't do that. But besides that, it was awesome.
Yeah. For me, the real star of this movie is the set.
Yeah.
I think the layout of this restaurant and the look of the restaurant is incredible. The ridiculous bathroom that looks insane. The like weird tunnels leading to and from the dining area.
Yes. The
gigantic circular bar.
Circular bar is great. Yeah.
I could really describe this whole set and in some like weird detail that and for something I can't do for a lot of movies that I really like better than this. And I think that's such a huge strength of the filmmaking here is that
hostess stand that's so far away.
It's down a tunnel and it all looks so good. And like, as you said, the setup for like where they're sitting and the, you know, and how much they sell that you think it's that one guy just because of where he is location wise.
Yeah.
I really, really love, as I said, the production design of this movie.
The waiter was a bit much.
Oh, the waiter. That's the part. Other than the ridiculous action movie
ending,
the waiter was a huge swing and a miss. And I think that actor's funny. He was in Search Party.
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
And there's a way, and like that, like as soon as I saw that it was him, I was like, "There's a way to make this work."
Yeah.
Yeah.
They just didn't nail that. And once when I realized, I was like, so Christopher Landon, he like does fun horror. So this is like one of his windows into fun, like a fun thriller.
Yeah.
But this character is not fun. They're just annoying. And
it's just there to make fun of improvisers. Right.
And I know that they're capable of doing that well. And even like shows like, I feel like Search Party and the other two do a very good job of making fun of that type of actor, improviser, all kinds of shit. I'm like, they've burnt, like those burns have been done successfully. I don't know why these felt a little cringy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I've seen this actor do it. And I'm like, so I know you're good at it.
I think this was a fun, definitely just like a fun romp. And again, it's like 88 minutes long or something. Like, there's definitely we won't get into the ending, but the ridiculous action scene at the end, and then the ridiculous way that she gets the weapon at the end. I was like, well, there's something wrong with all of this right now. Okay.
Oh God, I forgot about that. Thank you for reminding me of that. As I said, it's amazing that I can remember so much about the layout of this restaurant, but completely forgot about the denouement.
But that's also like the restaurant is very big, elaborate, and like, and it's very memorable. And the apartment or the house that they're in, it's like just not.
No.
You don't get that same sense of space for like a lot of good reasons, but anyway. Okay, let's keep it going. All right, I want to hear about Death of a Unicorn because I saw this trailer. I really wanted to see it, and then I saw both of your reviews on Letterboxd. I was like, I guess I'm good.
It's one of the more like complete lack of confidence you can tell from the filmmakers.
Okay.
It doesn't feel like they think they have something funny enough or clever enough or scary enough, and they can't pick a lane.
Yeah. It is so mealy-mouthed in its delivery. Like, it's not funny. It's not thrilling. It's not really anything.
Yeah.
And it's...
The satire falls flat on its face.
Right. Like, how do you go this high concept of a premise and then you, like, just don't really quite nail any bit of it?
No.
So is it just that like unicorns exist and like they cure everything and but they're and they're at like a weekend resort of some sort or like a weekend getaway type of thing that happens to have a unicorn? Yeah.
And so they're at a big nature preserve.
Okay.
That this like insanely 1% family has.
Okay.
They didn't know there were unicorns, but they're like a pharmaceutical company and they're like the whole thing it's they're like about old. To exploit this unicorn's blood and horn for their own gain.
Okay.
But they don't do a good job of making that funny.
Yeah.
Or biting. You know? Okay. Will Poulter's the only one that like gets anywhere close to being entertaining, I would say.
Yeah.
And it's still his hit rate for what is actually funny and interesting is really low. And it's so weird to have Richard E. Grant, who is such a fun, charming actor, kinda do nothing.
Everybody who's in this should be in this.
Okay.
And that's like the weird thing, because I'm like, I've seen Taya Leone do what they want her to do right now. I've seen everybody do the thing they're supposed to do in this movie, only they don't do it.
Interesting.
Yeah. And it's like,
okay,
I get it. Paul Rudd is trying to, like, Pam and Jenna Ortega are like family that get brought into all of this. And I'm like, I don't give a shit about why she's so emo. And yeah, Paul Rudd's kind of being an idiot. And I just expected more from a movie that is produced by Ari Aster.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
And I'm like, I just was waiting for it to say something.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't.
This movie does one of my greatest crimes, in which it stacks its support. It's like deep, deep supporting cast with comedians hoping they'll do something funny, but gives them nothing. Like Anthony Carrigan, who was in Barry, who played NoHo Hank, is in it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Just
the butler.
Kept waiting for him to matter.
Sunita Mani, an actress I really like. I'm trying to think of
just everything. She's in a bunch of stuff.
Oh, she was in Glow. She was super great in Glow. A lot of TV. What was Susan Spirited? I don't remember that, but she's super funny. And then
Spirited, like the Christmas movie
with
Will. Oh, okay.
Then Jessica
shows up in a bunch of stuff, and she's like, she's in this. She's a that guy.
Yeah, Jessica Hines, who was the female lead of the TV show Space with Simon Pegg.
Oh, yeah.
Like plays a bodyguard.
Oh.
So you're casting all these comedic actors for these practically almost under five roles. Almost like, as I said, hoping that like you'll find something on set or hoping that they'll bring some levity to this story because the story is silly. But like, there's just nothing, and as you said, like, they're like unrealized Chekhov's comedy guns.
Yeah,
yeah, okay.
And they're all over the place, and like, the biggest comedy is how unfunny this movie is.
Yeah.
Who directed this?
Alex Scharfman. I think it's their first film.
Got it. Okay.
And I mean, I'd like to see what they do with less money and more heavy-handed producing. I don't know. But like, this just, this just misses the mark, and it shouldn't.
Yeah.
Like, it's such a good idea that's just so poorly executed.
Yeah, it looks like mainly a producer, oddly enough.
Got it, okay.
Resurrection, Blow the Man Down.
I don't know, maybe they just weren't used to taking notes from people. They're used to giving them.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know where this came from then. Yeah, it's frustrating and disappointing in a way that I just don't even give it a try. Like, it's not.
Yeah, you're not. Okay. You're not. There's nothing that you're gonna miss if you don't see it.
Yeah.
There's not really anything. And like, yeah, Will Poulter is about as good as anyone is in this movie, and it's not that great.
Yeah.
So there's nothing that's like, well, you gotta see it for at least this.
Well, good to know. Good. I like the trailer looked like interesting. But it didn't fully drag me out to the theater. But it's good to know that, because another trailer that I thought looked really interesting, but I forgot came out, is Friendship.
It's still super limited. So
yeah, okay.
It won't be out until next Friday in most places. Right now, it's
got to be like Lincoln Center, though, right?
It's Lincoln Center, Angelica, and 4 LA theaters.
Okay.
And it stretches the limits of whether or not Tim Robinson works
in
film.
Yes.
Tell me more.
Consider that the average season of I Think You Should Leave, from the first episode through the last episode, is 90 minutes. This movie.
That's a full season.
Yes. A full season is 90 minutes.
Yeah. Got it. Okay.
This movie is 100 minutes.
So
you're getting an entire season of I Think You Should Leave. And the question you have to ask yourself is, do I have the appetite to sit in a sustained Tim Robinson world for 100 minutes? If your answer is I don't know, then maybe this isn't for you.
Yeah.
But if really?
The answer is I think so, this is for you. This is an interesting movie to like rate, because I fucking loved it, but I loved it because I pretty much I'm a Tim Robinson stan, and whatever he does will make me laugh. And in the theater, even his dumb face, the first time you see it, had the theater rolling.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
And like,
the reveal of his face is so funny.
If the reveal of his face doesn't seem like the sort of thing that would be funny to you, then maybe just don't go for this one.
Yeah,
love it, but I'm fully aware of the fact that some people that I might be married to hate him. Don't
yeah. got it. It.
Okay. They can only like it under the right chemical circumstances.
Mm.
Whereas I am always on board.
Yeah, I had such a good time with it, but even so, I kept questioning every once in a while, was this running its course? Was this, at what point does this stop being a functioning movie?
Yes.
And be a sketch that actually has gone on a little too long?
Yes.
But I think it goes to weird enough places plot-wise, and the rest of the world kind of starts to break apart around him that really
works for me.
Yes. I think after, like, somewhere around the 60-ish minute mark, maybe a little past that, when there's conflict between him and his wife, had that not really gone the way it does, I see this movie not working as well. But they just start taking some bigger swings, which force a Tim Robinson type character to swing bigger.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it works.
Okay. Yeah.
Now,
go ahead.
No, go ahead.
There is a Slipknot needle drop that
really
that made me laugh so fucking hard. And it's just the fact that that song's playing. I cackled.
Yes.
And I think it's
brilliant.
Yeah. So I think the movie around him has those little moments that's like kind of working into the comedy, into his comedy. So I think, as I said, I think the rest of the world around him works. There's like one point he's in his garage and he's got one photo hanging on the wall.
Okay.
And it's very, very small. You can barely see it. And the photo is that famous photo of Hillary Clinton in the Situation Room while they were watching the raid to kill Osama bin Laden.
Yeah.
And it's so fucking funny that that is the one photo hanging on the wall in this, in his, and it's just like, I don't know why it's there, but it's so goddamn funny.
Yes, you do.
Wait, they bring it up?
Think about the meal he talks about several times.
Oh God. Yes. Okay. Yes, yes, yes.
And like, it's just, this is the sort of, and like, I gave it 4 on Letterboxd, like begrudgingly, because I with most Tim Robbins and stuff, I'm like, there's what I enter with, and then there's where it goes on repeat viewing. So I was like reticent to give it a 4 because I was like, once I see it again, it's going to go up. And then yes, by the time right. I've seen this movie like a million times, it's going to be the only thing I talk about. So do I give it a 3.5? And then I was like looking at, I think I had seen Thunderbolts like right before that. I'm like, I can't. I can't give the new Marvel the same thing I give a movie I will love for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
So I put it at 4, and I can tell you a year from now, this is probably going to be 4.5, 5, because yeah. This is the movie that if the more you see it, the more fucked you'll become and the more you will be on board with his brand of humor. But okay. I say all that to say, if he's not for you, don't see this movie.
Don't see it. Got yeah, it. Okay.
What I think works is that this is not a director he worked with on his show. The writer director is not someone who really has a history with him. He's directed some episodes of Our Flag Means Death and Pen 15.
So like things that have an off-kilter sense of humor, yes. But a different off-kilter sense of humor.
Yeah, so I think he brings enough of his own voice into this that works around Tim Robinson, because it truly feels insane to think about someone writing a script and being like, you know who's perfect for this part? Tim Robinson, because that doesn't change anything I wrote.
Yeah.
Like, you have to believe that that character, a million different things change because of who's playing that part.
Yes.
And so, like, he has to have known in some way that this is like a tone that he wanted to go for as well. So I think it really works. I think if this was a script written with Tim Robinson and I don't know, maybe like in a bit more almost planned out, I don't think it would have. Yeah. I might be completely talking out of my ass about like the genesis of this project, but for me, it like really, I don't know. I think the filmmaking around it helps tamper him.
Yes. And it's just weird because like my assumption going in was, I was like, like you call it a Tim Robinson movie because it definitely feels like, you know, like one of his vehicles. So you're naturally thinking, oh, he must have written this. This is his baby. It's not.
Yeah.
See, that's kind of what I was expecting just from how you've both been talking about it so far. So it's interesting to hear that, like, he hadn't, I mean, I'm sure he had input at some point, but that it was someone else's like brainchild.
And it works so well.
Yep.
And even like, there's a character named Devin who's mentioned more than seen. And as soon as you meet Devin, you're like, there was no way this could have been anyone other than him.
Okay. All right. All right.
It just sort of nails certain things. And like, it's a guy who he's in a lot of stuff now, and he plays that character so well. It's just so fucking fun. And
he is a hot Jimmy Tatro.
Yes. Yes.
Like, or a handsome Jimmy Tatro. Not that Jimmy Tatro is not handsome, but.
Shots but fired. I'd say like more objectively handsome to everyone who is alive. But it's so fun, and it will get more fun. And it's really nice to see Paul Rudd basically do I Love You Man almost 20 years later again,
yeah,
but different and weirder.
Yeah.
And I watched I Love You Man this weekend. And
I like that movie a lot.
I saw it when it first came out, but I was so blackout drunk that I did not remember it. I just remembered liking it because I was drinking gin with Nos energy drink at the time. It was, I called it Fast and Furious. So the second time I've ever seen that movie was this past weekend. And I was like, I need to see it with friendship and just as like a double bill.
Right.
Man, it works. It works really, really well.
Mm. Okay.
It's great. It'll likely be a top tenner for me because I'll imagine by that point I'll have seen it at least 10 times.
Yeah.
Or at least selected scenes. And it's great. See it. Unless you don't think you like him, in which case, don't.
Yeah. All right. All right. Good advice. Good advice. Do not touch Willie. All right. Let's kick it to the final twofer that we got here. We're talking about The Accountant 2. Peter, I don't remember what you gave this thing on a Letterboxd. I'll be honest. But I had a good square dancing scene. That was about it.
Yeah. So it really runs the... Because, I mean, this is a superhero movie in the sense that, like, it treats autism as... X-Men.
A super, yeah, exactly.
Which a joke I stole from somebody, but it's so true. But it runs that rule for superhero sequels in which it must include a dance sequence.
Yep.
Which is very weird and funny. I like the first one better. I think Ben Affleck forgot how to play this role because he's doing this weird voice that he did not do the first
time. Okay. So that's new. I was going to bring this up because I was like, what the fuck is going on right now?
Yeah.
The entire time I was watching this movie.
But my enjoyment of this movie really comes from two places. One, that Jon Bernthal is incredible.
He's really good.
He plays that it. Like, I'm so angry, but I'm sad because I'm angry and I'm angry because I'm sad thing so well.
Yep.
That like weird modern macho.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. And then I took my dad to see this and
there you go.
Raved for like 2 days about it.
The only three people that I know who've seen this movie and wrote about it on Letterboxd are people who all make mention of dads. So where do you think this falls in like a dad core type film? Would this be like, it's a Saturday and it's on, so I'm watching it, which is like the lowest level of a dad movie? Or would you say this is going in your dad's top 10? And a dad's top 10 is basically garbage. But
Equalizer 1, Equalizer 2, Equalizer 3. Yeah.
Equalizer 1, 2, 3, whatever Denzel's been up to lately. The first Expendables, when they were good.
Right.
A guy who likes that kind of movie, where would you say this is, a higher level or a lower level?
I think a higher level. I think this is absolutely if it's on TV, my dad's not changing the channel.
That's funny.
Well, I think that's a baseline movie. Nice. So it's baseline that, do you believe a dad would seek it out? Because dads don't like to seek much out unless it's one of their favorite five things.
I think there is a chance if this is on TV, my dad is saying, oh, wait, I should just watch both of them.
Okay.
Oh, that's really funny. Okay.
Would your dad change their plans because Accountant 2 is on?
I don't know if we're all the way that high.
Okay. That's up there.
That is something me and him were going to go to dinner and left 1 hour later than we were planning on because Master and Commander was on TV.
Okay.
Oh, my God.
Now, that's pure dad film.
Yeah.
High level. Okay, so it's definitely, so it's in there. It's in the mix. It's probably in the average range, which is good.
Yeah. I mean, it's no Equalizer. Like, again, like, I think that, like, but you're saying,
Equalizer 2?
I don't even think it's Equalizer. Well, I actually like 3 better than 2.
I never saw 3.
The first one's much better than this one.
Okay. Yeah.
I've never seen either, so I will watch. I will watch them soon. I'm learning to like dad stuff. I always have.
The problem with this one for me is that it makes Ben Affleck too much of a joke through some of
it. Yeah.
While at some point still having him like have genuine moments of like his effort around his ability to emote and you know, connect to people. But they're like the whole speed dating sequence is pretty embarrassing.
That was terrible. I think that I think you're right about Barenthal though. Like that, especially again, like I know that it's in like the trailer and stuff like that, but the actual line dancing scene and like watching his face it's just so well done in that, like exactly like that whole thing of just, how you were describing it, but also like, I'm mad at my brother, but I love my brother. And it's this whole thing. And it seems like he has this like pure joy as he is actually like having fun and then just like switches on a dime. I guess watch it, Russ, you know, what else you doing?
So John Barenthal's kind of running bit of this movie is that he bought a puppy and he's currently waiting for the breeder to wean it off its mother. Okay. And that's his bit. But the conclusion of it is
incredible. Oh, the conclusion's great.
Truly.
Wait, did you say dumb or good?
Incredible.
That very end, I was just like, wait, why is he getting, oh my God.
So good.
I like this movie more than I thought now that we're talking about it.
I think so too, but because it's we're talking about John Barenthal. John Barenthal's character is
really good.
Far and away the best part, and his performance is so great. I think like this is his lane of character that I think he should always play, even though it's like fuck typecasting if you're incredible at it.
Yeah. No, totally. I forgot. I watched I also saw The Amateur. Shit, that movie wasn't very good.
I refuse to watch a Rami Malek movie.
Yeah, no, he lip syncs most of the movie anyway. All right, let's keep it going. Let's go. All right, we got the big three.
That's what everyone's calling them.
Everyone's calling these all equal box office numbers, I think. So let's start with Black Bag.
Definitely in third place in terms of box office,
Which is a bummer, but also probably like as far as gross versus how much it costs to make.
Yeah.
I assume Black Bag, it's Soderbergh. You know, he probably like filmed it in a weekend for like a nickel or something like that.
He's the most economical filmmaker around.
Yeah,
like both for cost and also just like use of time in a movie where this thing moves and there is nothing wasted and you're there for an hour and a half. It's like it's really well done. Well, everyone's super good in it.
It plays like he edits the movie every single night. His movies don't. They're so and like economical is like, I think, high praise when there's nothing wasted.
Yeah.
No, and it's no. like when the average runtime of a movie these days is like 220 and like almost nothing happens and you don't care.
Yeah.
To get a movie that's like, hi, I'm 90 minutes long. I'm really good. I'm like a better Bond than most Bonds.
Yeah.
And I'm over.
I will have like basically no exposition because you're just going to learn about it through the characters as to what they're doing. I saw this movie twice. I'm pretty sure the second time I saw it was 5 minutes shorter. And like, that's like this is like how, like he just keeps going and just like trimming everything down and like, we probably don't need this line of dialogue.
Yeah, like, what? he treats you like you're an adult.
Yeah, exactly.
That opening dinner party is
it's great.
So fucking good. Everyone in this movie is absolutely working to the top of their ability.
Yes, 100%.
It's also just like objectively a really nice movie to look at.
Yeah, like 100%.
You've got people the wearing weird, nice like, things in nice places, being cool. Like that's always gonna be a good hang when it's especially when it's short. You will put it on because you just like how everyone looks and the stuff you're seeing. Like, it's like visual. It's visually good to see.
Yeah,
that opening dinner party sequence with the like kind of soft focus, kind of that like sort of blurs the lighting on the table, looks incredible.
Yeah. And even like before.
It's one of those things that you expect almost someone on the internet to be like, why do movies look like this? It's out of focus. And I think it's one of the best looking sequences of the year.
And even like before that dinner party where he's like in the bar and it's just like direct shot behind his head as he's walking around and you're just kind of seeing things that are happening and you know exactly, it's so well choreographed and crafted. And all this is just him like walking through this club. But it's like, just, it's all so well done.
I feel like Michael Fassbender is one of those actors who is not used to his maximum capacity often.
No.
Yeah. Like he is often way better than the stuff he's in or the stuff he's given. And this is the material meeting the actor in the right moment. Like the same way we probably all felt way, way back in X-Men First Class when he was in Argentina. And you were like, oh, holy shit. This guy is a little different. Like, and we really haven't got to see him really sink his teeth into something too much. This he sinks his teeth into, and it's sick.
Yep.
Cate Blanchett fucking kills it.
Phenomenal. Yeah. Tom Burke is phenomenal. Oh,
I love. I always like seeing him in basically everything, especially from like the Strike series, which he is fantastic in as well.
Reggae Jean Page. He's so funny in the Dungeons and Dragons movie.
Yep.
And I think and that's this? One of the only things I've seen him in. And so I was like, I don't know if he's like a great actor, but he's so good.
Yeah.
His performance really blew me away because I just didn't know that was his level. And then
Pierce Brosnan,
I don't know at all, was wonderful.
Brosnan for like a second is great. Oh my god. This is just such a well casted, well acted, small. Every time that they're on the fishing boat, even then it's a couple scenes are just like, this is beautiful. This is great. I love watching this right now. And then the bookending of the dinner party scenes, and that last dinner party scene is just so well executed, such like tight dialogue in it. And then as everything comes revealed, you're just like, oh my god, this was so good.
spends its runtime like talking up his ability on polygraph tests.
Yep.
And the sequence is so good, and yet you're watching it being like, I have no idea what he's learning right now.
Yep. And even the polygraph sequence is fantastic as well. Where it just ends with you like, will you come to my house for dinner? And God.
After that, you get that what he figures out, but I didn't know what he was doing.
Yeah.
And not in a way that feels like it was a cheat.
Yeah. Oh my God. I could watch this movie again tonight. Like this will be on my I feel like there's gonna like this and Sinners are two movies that we're talking about that are almost definitely going to end up being in like a top 10 for me.
Yeah.
At least in conversation.
Yeah, it's weird to be in May, and I really think I have at least three movies that are a lock for my top 10.
Yeah.
The one that's slightly on the outside of that is the potential fourth would be how much I love Friendship on a rewatch.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Okay.
My assumption is I will absolutely love it. I have at least, I have three almost safe bets.
Did we talk about Minecraft on this podcast?
We did not.
We did not.
Oh, did anyone see Minecraft except for me?
I did not.
I can't believe you would even think you need to ask that question.
So you did, Pete?
No, I did not see Minecraft.
Really?
Right, give us two sentences on Minecraft.
It's Jared Hess. It's literally, you're watching like a Napoleon. It feels like a Jared Hess movie. It feels like you're watching Napoleon Dynamite, but I've in like in a Minecraft
pretty
world.
Pretty good things about it, which yeah. is.
It's pretty good. Like it's, it, I went into the, and went to it being like, this is just going to suck. It's going to be dumb. I'm going to watch it. And then I realized that it was a Jared Hess movie. It's like, oh yeah, this feels like him.
I didn't know that it was a Jared Hess movie until like 2 weeks into it being out. Cause I was like, wait a minute. Is this the spiritual sequel to Nacho Libre?
It is. It 100% is. It 100% is, and I didn't know it was a Jared Hess movie until I was just like, this is so oddly, like, there's, like, everybody is, like, a really weird character right now, and everything, like, is just, like, a little bit off, and then the director credit came up, was like, oh, yeah, all right.
So then that makes the hair choice for Jason Momoa make way more sense.
Total sense, exactly. Like, everything that you think about, like, his movies, how they kind of portray, like, the Midwest and, like, some of the weirdness around it, you're just like, oh, yeah, he's just doing it in Minecraft.
All right, I'll see it. Yeah. I think it's now. It's like you think you can rent it at home. So
yeah, it is streamable now. Yeah, I think it's totally worth
it out this weekend. Another movie that I only saw, I think, that is not on this list is Magazine Dreams.
Oh yeah,
remember when Jonathan Majors was gonna get an Oscar nomination and was gonna be the next big thing, but then he allegedly got into an altercation with his partner and then got fired from Marvel and they had to change Kang and then they gave us Robert Downey Jr. back, but now he's Dr. Doom and that doesn't make sense. And
I do remember all of these things
are all that super good, but so Magazine Dreams was the movie that he did and it is dark. It is like basically a taxi driver-ish bodybuilder.
Oh.
So what do we know about bodybuilders who like competitions? They're weirdos. And he is the ultimate weirdo to a degree that I'm like, oh, this role seemed a little too easy for my guy.
Ah, okay, gotcha.
There's also like one scene where he's on a date because he's objectively a very attractive man.
Mm-hmm.
But once you start hearing him speak,
mm-hmm.
you gradually get terrified. And it is a phenomenal sequence. He's great. I can't remember the actress's name who is on the date with him. She's great too. This is just like a really bad time, this movie, but it is really good. It's really good. I get all the praise. But yeah, fucking dark, dude.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, I'm realizing there's a bunch of movies that Tig saw only and we haven't talked about at all. Some I don't want to hear anything about, like Until Dawn, but can I get quick 2 sentences on The Surfer?
Oh my God. Yeah. I totally forgot that I saw The Surfer. Yeah. I went, it was at Lincoln Center. I was like, there's a new Nick Cage movie. I should go and see that. Yeah. It's real weird.
Okay. Is this like a real movie or like one of those movies he was making when he had no money?
It's a roadside attraction movie. So both at the same time.
Yeah, I think that's
splitting the diff.
It is obscenely beautiful. There are like these like long shots of just like the beach and the water and like watching the waves and things like that, like on like this like a beautiful idyllic Australian beach that you, when you watch it, you're just like, this is like amazing just to see how like full focus, deep shot, like it's amazing. And you're just like, I feel so calm. And then it's just watching Nicolas Cage get like beaten down. And then eventually you're just like, something was mentioned before that I think is going to be the twist. Then it is. And then like, it kind of takes off from there. And it's, that's actually very close to the end, but it's weird. Let's just say it's weird. I kind of suggest seeing it again, because of how like beautifully this is shot. I would say like, hey, if it's in theaters, go and check it out. But yeah, it's he's great in it. And man, there are a lot of bullies in Australia, I guess. You just feel so bad for him the whole time. You just keep feeling worse and worse from the whole time. check it out. Surfing.
Yeah, I do want to see it. Okay.
Yeah. Oh yeah, Until Dawn. That was a weird one. Yeah, God. Yeah, I fucking missed Friendship, but I saw Until Dawn, so I guess good on me. All right, let's talk about Thunderbolt Asterix.
I didn't see any movie called Thunderbolts.
I saw
a movie called New Avengers.
Oh, what a button at the end for that one.
Dumb.
Then the next one's going to be the legal battle against New Avengers.
It's finally going to be the trial of the Chicago 7 of the Marvel Universe we've been planning.
This is good.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean,
it's solid. Like, yes. Look, it's not like a great movie, but like, it also feels so much better than the last like 2 or 3 years of Marvel movies.
It's leaps and bounds ahead.
There are 36 Marvel movies now.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Something like that. This has to be at least in the top 15.
I was thinking the exact same thing. Like,
that doesn't feel like high praise, but when you consider that, like, the last, well, let's use Brave New World, for example. If there's 36 movies, Brave New World was probably like the 25th, 26th best movie. It's fallen into like the not so great zone.
Yeah.
At least this is like objectively good. I think Jake Schreier, the director who also did Beef on Netflix, which is a fucking awesome show. I think he did a great job. I think the music was really good. I love this. This is like the first Marvel soundtrack that is legitimately good. Like, because a lot of their music just all sounds super samey, but Sunbox, who they did the score for Everything Everywhere All at Once. Once you know it and then you listen to it, it makes all the sense in the world. They gave, like, Bucky got a theme song that was really cool. Thunderbolts have a theme song that actually really works. And the music is also just good. I thought the final battle, was one of the more creative things they've done in a Marvel movie in a while, because generally speaking, they all just turn into big, bad
CGI monsters
in the sky, and it's pulsating and it's going to blow everything up. And that's pretty much been the standard since like the first Avengers. So it's nice to see an ending that subverts that and also keeps the narrative of the movie about just, you know, being sad and shit like that. It doesn't just pay it lip service, because Marvel movies are always like, this is the first Marvel movie that's a this. And this really is about mental health, and it stays about that.
Yeah. As I said, it all works better than a lot of others. I'm just tired of the kind of trauma story that horror's been doing so often lately, that now Marvel is doing one.
I see.
Because for me as well, like, Yelena's story is just Natasha's done over again.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, this is the same, but I have so much red in my ledger that she did in the first Avengers movie.
Yeah.
I found it annoying. It suffered in that, so we have all these characters, but clearly there's ones we don't give a shit about. Like,
Ghost?
Ghost. What bothered me the most was, like, we get that U.S. agent is a real piece of shit.
Yep.
I don't know why we have to see flashes of his, like, shitty life.
Yeah.
All it does is make it stand out more that we don't see ghosts.
Yes.
Yeah.
I thought that's everyone was going to get that.
Yeah.
And
so, like, you can't do 75% of them.
Yeah.
That's fair. Also, like, is this the first time Ghost has shown up since, like, what, Ant-Man 2?
Yes.
Yeah.
And, like, so you don't need to give David Harbour one, because he's kind of a little bit more of the comic relief.
Yeah.
Right.
And, you know, his, you know, daughter is in the movie, so we don't need that. I get it. Yelena's the star of the movie, so she's going to get that. Lewis Pullman as a Sentry is gonna get that. It's just weird that every major Thunderbolt minus Ghost.
But was there a bunch of Ghosts? I can't even remember Ant-Man 2, but didn't they dive into some of it in Ant-Man 2?
A bit. Like, we do know her backstory from Ant-Man 2. Like, she was from some Eastern Europe, or maybe like some Eastern European place that like was ruined because of war, or maybe like scientific testing, blah, blah, blah. Like, they killed her dad because he was looking for something. I forget exactly what.
And like Bill Foster, Lawrence Fishburne was trying to keep her, that suit.
Yeah.
It was like a
container suit to keep her alive
or whatever. Yep.
Well, like, but so you could, so if we've done all that, but like, why not give us a quick little look-see?
Just something.
What her life's been like since then.
Yeah, since that, those like 7 years since then.
Yeah, she has this suit that finally, and she's gotten help from like the Ant-Man people to stabilize her. So show us that even though she kind of got what she wanted, she's not
still killing people or whatever.
Yeah, like, what is she doing?
Yeah.
Yeah. So she's not satisfied. She doesn't actually have a real life. So that could easily show us some interest in that character. And she just feels so tossed off. And this is a movie that shoots a character that was advertised as being part of this team in the face in 3 seconds.
Oh, right? Yeah.
So why do that? And then have another character metaphorically shot in the face, in the sense that we don't care about her just as much as we don't care about Taskmaster.
Right.
Yeah.
And that one shot her.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
So fuck it. It's if you didn't see a Marvel movie in the first couple of weeks, that's on you.
Yeah, totally.
But it's like so weird. I was like, damn, are we going to get some understanding as to like what that meant for this person who by the end of Ant-Man 2 was like, you're good now. It's like, well, you just clipped a bitch in the head. So I don't know that you are.
Because there's one point in which they think that Ghost has ditched them. That, thinking back on the movie, would have worked better if she did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If she really just fucked off. Because, like, you don't get any connection between her and them.
No.
You don't kind of see why she's doing it. I mean, you could easily guess at some of it, but like we could, it makes more sense for us to understand that Walker's doing this without having to see that he had a shitty life. The dude's a prick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But not his shitty life, that he's created his own problems. Like, he's such an asshole.
He really, so like, he really that. Is an asshole.
So the switch over at the end, I don't think it super works for me. I think it goes from them wanting
from Thunderbolts to the press conference.
Yes. When they're like chasing, quote unquote, not exactly, but like they're cornering Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Yeah. Valentine. Yeah.
And then they step through the curtain and they're at a press conference. I don't get why they would go with it, especially Bucky, who is a sitting congressman.
Yeah.
Bucky for sure doesn't make sense. Yeah, totally.
I think like as good as the 36th Marvel movie can be, these movies cannot escape the continuity. MCU.
Like, well, and I guess the continuing nature.
Right.
Notion.
They can't keep this movie is disconnected from everything until that. And they just can't not fucking do that. And it's like
break from it. Yeah.
It's fine. But it really, we shouldn't know all of that going into Doomsday. We shouldn't.
Yeah.
It would be better for us to not know what's coming. But they're, I think, also so afraid of nothing doing well now that they were like, this was definitely, not studio interference, because Marvel is Marvel. But I feel like this is like them saying, we got to make this very Avengers connected.
They needed to bring it back somehow.
Yeah. And I think of the new Avengers, it is responsible for some of the box office of this movie.
Yeah.
It definitely is.
Totally.
So
it totally is.
This made them any more money, it was worth it in their eyes.
Yeah.
Because we still like more saw it. None of us liked it, but we still fucking saw it, and it made somebody else see it. So they win.
And I think that like more than anything, for this is that I feel like between, you know, like you were saying, Russ, of how these movies, and not even just like recent memory, but like almost since the beginning, have devolved into CGI blobs that are like boss fights at the end of a video game. Both this and DC, and just kind of like, you know, in general, a lot of the movies today, to see something that doesn't devolve into that by the end of it was very refreshing and just like more enjoyable, because like there wasn't a point where it's just like, I don't like, is that just mud on the screen? What the hell is going on right now? There was never a point where I said that. And like the other, you know, like the dream world or whatever that it gets brought into, and like, you know, shadowing people. Like, I thought that it was all really well done.
Yeah.
And it's nice to see them pushing it to something that just felt more, grounded isn't the right word, but that didn't feel like it was just like could have been AI generated in some way.
Yeah.
And with that, let's take it home. With Sinners.
Jesus Christ.
A like, movie.
What could be said that hasn't already been said by the
movie
millions of people who've seen it?
Rules.
It rips so hard.
Yeah, I gave it 4 stars. And I.
And Russ's brother has a very harsh words for you for giving it that in his Letterboxd review.
I'm mad at myself for doing this, but like, it's a movie that's like, I know on a next watch it's higher. I was kind of like not a victim of my own expectations, but when the movie does become a vampire movie, it's not in any way, shape, or form what you were expecting in terms of what the vampires are kind of what their vibe is.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
So, but inside the barn, like their like prep for them, I found a little flat in the sense that I didn't want it to be a vampire movie anymore. Even though that's what I know I signed up for, the movie before this I thought was so fucking good I didn't want it to end.
Yes.
And you know, I refer to the scene from Black Bag as one of the best sequences of the year, when this movie has potentially 2 of the best sequences of the year.
I feel like most of this movie is potentially the best sequences of the year.
Yeah. Yes. There's clearly like, they also, this soundtrack fucking shit. Yeah. Like top to bottom, the score is awesome. And the soundtrack is awesome. Like everything about this, like Ludwig Göransson, I don't know like how he doesn't win an Oscar for this one this year. It's so good. But like the first blues song, when we get transported all over the place by Sammy, is the coolest shit I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
It's so fucking cool.
It's incredible.
And if you try to this movie is just so goddamn deep. There's so much shit
it's
going
so
on.
It's so dense. It's so fucking dense.
It is a meal. Yeah. Like I left the theater full. Like, and there's normally I could have used this or I could have used that. Yeah, I do get the fuck, the movie's changing, but even when the movie does change, that shit's fucking sick.
Yeah,
and it's like, super fun.
You forget sometimes because Michael B. Jordan is like a gorgeous human being. That he's
a lot of cute guys in this podcast to talk today.
He, dude, if Teen Beat was around, geez,
yep.
MBJ in 2 roles, and he's great in both. Jack O'Connell is Remick, one of the best like villains with a point, which seems to be Ryan Coogler's thing.
Totally.
Villains with reasons for being villains, which makes them connect more. There's just really, there's not a fucking, and Delroy Lindo, who we all forget.
So good.
So good.
So fucking
He's
good.
He's so fucking good in this.
The biggest gift of the last couple of years of me not watching trailers was not knowing Delroy Lindo was in this.
Oh.
And just being so fucking excited when he walks on screen. Well, I'm sorry, when he's sitting down. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he's sitting. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
When he's playing the harmonica, I was like, wait a second, is that Delroy? I was so fucking pumped.
Yeah, there's cool. It's practically flawless.
I mean, Omar Benson Miller, yep, kills. I mean, like that whole scene of like when he comes back,
great.
It's so, you're just so tense the entire time. You're just like, I was like, wait, is it? Oh my God. I don't want him to be so badly, but like, I know he is, but like, maybe he's not. And then he just won't come in. I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah. It's so great. And like, for a lot of this movie to also hang on a fucking kid who's never been in a movie before.
Yeah.
And Miles
is really
Keaton,
good.
Like,
really good.
Like, what the, where the fuck did you find this dude?
Just an incredible, not even just an incredible singing voice, but just an incredible voice.
Yes.
Yeah.
And like, oh my God, you hang this movie on him and say, all right, you're the one we're gonna really have to care about. Make us care.
Yeah.
And it happens. There's
it happens.
One single goal that Ryan Coogler had for this movie that he did not meet the mark on. And it's just so fucking weird to see somebody so young who's really kind of just made other people shit for the last 10 years. And like, based on a true story, just take something that was like his own idea. So I'm like, so this is what happens when it's just purely unfiltered you?
Yeah.
Holy crap.
So good.
And yeah, like, what is he gonna do now? Because Warner Brothers must be like, we need, now that HBO Max is HBO Max again, we need you to make a show. We need the greater, we need like, we need the cinematic universe.
Oh, I like that. Nicely done.
Is he gonna do that? Or is he gonna just say, nah, I made one movie that I get to own in 25 years.
Right. And that's the thing as well. Like the rights to this thing and like how he kind of like kept it all is huge.
That's incredible. Yeah. Like,
I'm interested to see what happens in 25 years in terms of like, what does that actually mean for him and for potentially for filmmakers who follow this path with like all the, like all the strikes, the strikes that happened and like the lack of change that happened. And, you know, we're still in this weird space. Like Affleck and Damon are trying with artist equity.
Yeah.
Right.
All these different things that people are attempting. I'm so interested to see where this leads down the road.
I think what is going to happen, it will be kind of like any other industry. If you are somebody who can command that, you'll get it. If you're a Tarantino, if you're like one of the capital A auteurs, you will be able to do this because your movies will be bankable or awardsy enough, but your run of the mill dude will not be able to do this.
Yeah.
And I'm happy for the people who can do this because you if you produced, directed, and wrote something, it's yours. And it must kind of suck to see the rights get shifted and now somebody else can just take your thing and do something else to it. So I think it is pretty cool, but I don't think it's going to be an everybody thing. It's going to be the Tarantinos, the Cooglers, those top level people.
I could see it being like, depending on how much it costs and what the budget is, you know, like it feels like there's something around, like didn't like Image at one point just like go like full, like creator owned everything.
Well,
like
it was that,
for
that,
like comic.
And it's in like to start. I don't know what
and then it
now.
Is it even still around? Didn't like DC buy it and now it's like definitely not that?
Well, so all the guys that
they
started
Wildstorm.
It all sold it like immediately. Like Jim Lee sold Wildstorm stuff and like they just like cashed in.
Yeah, okay.
There may be a budgetary thing. Like Sinners costs $90 million. So you're not, I think if your movie is under a certain price point, yeah, they can justify, yeah, whatever. That can't make or break the studio.
Right.
No, I can't break the studio, I should say. But no, I'm not giving you ownership when I spent $200 million on this movie. Like, I just don't see how that's feasible. But 90?
Yeah. Maybe.
Sure. So I think that might be, I think that might be it. There's a probably a certain price point where those deals don't make sense. And if a movie is $200 million, they need to, it needs to clear what, like $550, $600 to even be profitable? No, it's, you're not getting your owner, right. You're not getting ownership.
Weird of fucking that. Time.
Dumb business.
This movie shut it down. Fucking rules. And
this movie not, fucking rules. It's really so much fun.
Everyone should see it. It's so like, deep. Go, everyone should see it again because it's clear everyone is going to see it.
Oh, this is a movie that I fully intend to watch multiple times this year.
Yeah, I can't wait for it to be a little like when the fall rolls around and it's like spooky season. This is going to be so good to watch when it's like getting dark early.
Yeah.
I can't wait for this to be on like VOD.
It's my most anticipated rewatch because I need to fix all the problems with my own expectations.
Yeah.
And my own feelings.
And now you know what's coming in.
Yeah, I know. And it's like, because like I was initially turned off even by the framing device. I was like, why are we doing it this way? It seems so silly, but sitting on it for a day, I loved the context that sequence when he walking into the church covered in blood is given by the end of it. And like, what is the actual choice that he's making? Because for me, with like the movie being so much about what assimilation could potentially mean.
Yeah.
In terms of what you could lose. I can't stop thinking about that scene. And then also the post-credit scene. Like, you shouldn't be allowed to have a post-credit scene that's this fucking deep.
Yeah. And a post-credit scene that's at the very end that's just like a button. There's another one. Like, why does this have two? And why do they matter?
God.
It's great.
Make more movies like this. That's right. Like, it's, come on.
Let's do it.
Oh, let's do it. We could do it.
Alex,
we
could do it.
That was pretty good. That was actually pretty good. That high pitch was perfect. Nearly nailed it. All right. Let's wrap this thing up. What do we have coming out soon other than obviously Mission Impossible in a week, next week?
Stitch and Impossible. You know how they be putting two movies together? Stitch
Impossible. Oh, we're man.
Stitch
okay,
and Impossible
awesome.
In a week.
Final Destination, is that
Final
this
Destination
week?
Is this weekend.
I'm so excited
weekend.
For Final Destination.
And me it's too. Like it the first so one that's like, oh, we forgot people like these movies. And they've been gone for so long that this one's actually going to do well.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I think
it's going to make like 35, 40 million this weekend.
I think it's going to eat up so much of Thunderbolt's business, but I think Sinners is still going to chug along at the
I think so. I hope so. Yeah.
It's going to be 1, 2, 3, those movies. But then, next week we get Stitch and Impossible. And the 30th, we get Karate Kid Legends, which is doing something for the kid in me because I watch
I'll
Cobra Kai.
See it.
And
I will see it.
The Phoenician
I don't watch Cobra Kai.
You don't?
What is the Phoenician Scheme?
That's
the
new Wes Anderson.
Oh, that's already out? Holy crap.
It'll
I know
be
that.
Out,
I,
okay. End of the month, May 30th.
Shit.
But
okay,
that
that's awesome.
Karate Kid Legends. So the Phoenician Kid Legends.
Oh, and Bring Her Back, which is the horror movie from the Let Me In people.
Oh,
which the yes. I like looked at a couple of I can't stop watching trailers even though I know I should. And that one like I was like, what the fuck? I don't like this.
Yes.
Which
it makes it feel weird.
It's a good sign. So we've got a pretty decent selection of shit still coming out in May. And then early June we're gonna get How to Train Your Dragon.
That's the one I'm just like, I don't really.
Here's the thing. I understand that like, this is the new thing is making movies, making animated movies real, but like, you gotta wait a while, man. Like you need a whole generation or two to pass. Yeah. The kids who saw this when they were 5 are only like 15.
Like, yeah. The only thing I'm really happy about is that clearly this is a director protecting his film.
Okay. That's fair.
Because so he's been quoted in the past of being like, they better fucking not make a live action version of this. Like, That's how fine. Dare they better not. They better not. So I think this is like, this seems to be his Matrix Resurrections. Like, I have to,
okay.
If I don't want someone to do this, I have to take it over.
Yeah. And I mean, I do think the design is, it's very, it is How to Train Your Dragon. Like, they didn't go too, they still, Toothless still be looking like Toothless, which is good.
Yeah. Which is good.
Also,
what's that movie with The Weeknd that's coming out?
Where that's Hurry Up Tomorrow, by... and that comes out
okay
tomorrow.
Tomorrow? All right. Weird.
I have no interest.
Yeah, same.
Neither do I, but I keep seeing like commercials for it, and I was like,
if it's one of those times where it's like The Idol, which was his HBO show, then it will be dog shit. So I'm good.
It's like one of those times where like I see commercials so infrequently that by like the fourth time I see a commercial for a movie, I'm like, do I want to see this? Like,
yeah,
I guess. Is this working on me?
I know that will not work on me.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we've got a pretty decent crop of shit coming out between now and June, which I imagine sometime after How to Train Your Dragon, we'll probably be doing this again, because it seems like we've got at least seven movies in the pipeline. Oh, and the new Celine song, Materialist.
Oh, fantastic.
Oh,
yeah. Is also nice. June 13th. Okay. So I believe we will probably be doing this in about another month, because we're going to have to clear shit out.
Yeah, we're definitely going to have to clear things out. We've got some really big movies, some stuff that we're just like waiting to get at now. I didn't realize how much was coming out. I saw the trailer for Mission Impossible yesterday, and honestly thought it was going to be like an end of summer release. And then it was like, it said May 23rd. I was like, wait,
yeah,
what?
I think they're making a mistake again with the release date.
Yeah, this seems off, but, because again, I didn't even know. Like, this doesn't seem like the right time for it, but I'm really excited that it's coming.
The original Mission Impossibles were always May. It's just, it was sometime around the fourth one. Well, actually, just the first three were May. And then 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8 were all either August or late July. So they're coming back to the real estate that they once held.
Yeah, but I think, granted, it would be reported as if they were giving up. But if they took the August time slot that Nobody 2 is in right now, that
which is really weird that that's a thing.
A couple weeks after Fantastic Four, I think Mission Impossible would have a month to rule the box office.
Yeah, but when you consider, like, from an action movie, PG-13 action movie standpoint, there's nothing in June.
There's nothing else. Yeah.
Like,
here's my question.
Basically got clear runway until Jurassic Park, which is usually the 4th of July that weekend.
Yeah.
So like, I don't think the Karate Kid business is going to take away from Mission Impossible or Bring Her Back or the Phoenician Scheme or...
Yeah, but it's also holiday weekend is not a time to open movies anymore.
It's not.
It is a really weird time for Memorial Day.
Lilo and Stitch, that makes sense there.
That makes total sense for it. Yeah.
That's family. People are looking for shit to do. But I think if I were to like Mission Impossible or The Fasts or any of those, I would either do the like that opening May slot that's Marvel, or I'll see you in late July. Wait.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think
all right.
there's still going to be a Dead Reckoning part 2? Because are they really got to change that fucking title about the last one? Because it just seems really weird.
Tom Cruise movies do be changing their titles. So
yeah, it has been updated. It's no longer listed as Dead Reckoning part 1, I believe.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right. Yeah. I just looked it up on IMDb. I was like, I wonder if they ever updated that. It is still part 1 on IMDb right now. Get on that.
It's just Dead Reckoning.
Okay, that makes more sense then.
Cool. Okay.
All right, we got stuff coming out. Very excited for the movies that are coming out. We are closing in on our... there's a little bit of time left in a recording session right now. But I think I'm calling it.
Call it.
You can find us on the web at moviemoviepodcast.com. You can find Russ on all of the social media platforms as Rust Incredible. You can find Pete as... 12 Angry Peters on Letterboxd still? You haven't changed that yet?
No. I'm going to change again.
Sure. Yeah, no, yeah, you should. Okay, cool. You can find me on Letterboxd, Strava, and that's probably about it, as Johnny Tiggs. Alex, you'll find hopefully on the next
out podcast. Out in the real world, because he's not on this cast.
He's in the real world. Yeah, yeah, you can find him walking around Queens, I think, at this point. So
Alex doesn't walk around.
Fair. Well, thank you all for being here, and thank you all for listening. And we'll see you next time on the Movie Movie Podcast.
Clever button.